Well, let me give you a segue and say I've got 21 years to fit in 45 minutes. And it's going to be quite difficult to get that done. So what we're going to do is highlight a few things, touch on a few things, and nail you on a few others. Part of my background is criminal justice. So I'm a hard hitter, and I tend to step on toes because I believe in accountability and let's talk about it. There's no need to pussyfoot around and pass the buck. So eventually I'm gonna bring you all to the mirror and we're gonna look at that. And I'm gonna apologize ahead of time because it's probably gonna annoy a few people. Just because, but think of my world sitting across the table with offenders that are innocent, even though they've been convicted in a court of law. So we're gonna work hard on staying on track, of which I'm a notorious rabbit trail squirrel personality, so you may be here till midnight, but I'm going to work really hard on 45 minutes or so. So that I do really well without reading, but because I know too much and I get off on rabbit trails, I'm going to stick better to my script. Normally I'm quite comfortable in front of a group and don't need to look at my writing, but this lesson is all different. So with that, I have to tell you this is probably the absolute hardest presentation I've had to give in a very, very, very long time. Now, it's one thing to talk to a group of neighborhood ladies or people they assembled for me at work, because you just talk the world, you talk statistics, you talk basics, you know, this is what. But to bring it to a group of people that claim Christ, and many of you have Christ in you, we've got to change things a little bit. And I always believe in accountability. And when I say that, please don't think I've got my act together. I have come a long ways since 2006. I've got a long ways to go. But I'm still working on perfecting Christ in me also. So even though I hit hard and come at you, don't think I'm nailing or picking or being mean. So where in the world do we begin with this? How can I give you tools to shine Christ's light in the dark places? How can I do that? After 21 years, I can't promise you safety. But what I can promise you is the more you know, the better choices you make. It's kind of like a new baby Christian. How are they going to do if all they've got is wet water dripping from them from the tank, and now they're in a spiritual warfare? So we have got to learn, we have got to grow. So keep that in mind. The other thing I want you to do is periodically have a visual. And the girls are committed out there, so I couldn't bring them in here to do this. Some of you may have noticed at the end of the lunch line, it was so precious. There was four of them. It was Devin Zech, Chloe Zech, Laura Kruk, and Gabriel Luxmore. They were doing a four-person hang on to each other. So they were in a long line in this group hug, moving forward in the line. And I thought, oh, what? Do it again. I mean, they were moving as this unified little group. So every once in a while as I'm talking, I want you to think of these four girls doing that thing in the line, marching through here just randomly, making no talk to us at all, just randomly moving through and going back out. 5-10 minutes later, come in, doing it again. I want you to see what they're doing. And if I forget to bring it up at the end, please somebody hold me accountable. Because it's an important visual that you need to get. So, let me give you a glimpse of those 21 years. To start with, my dad was a cop, a detective. And he was part of the investigations that did pictures, fingerprints, developed pictures, kept information, worked with the district attorney's office. And sometimes that life invades your home. It's going to. So I knew a lot about crime even before I knew a lot about anything else because it exists. And I saw how it impacted my dad. Somehow, I drifted into the criminal justice world as a probation officer, not an offender, although I suppose there's a few times in my life I could have been arrested, but let's don't talk about that, as a probation officer. And I worked through the phone and in person across the table and in group settings with a bunch of victims and sometimes a bunch of offenders. My victims were crying, hurting, angry, demanding, and many of my offenders were innocent, justified, and it's not their fault. It's not, what? Why are you blaming me? Well, they've been through a court of law by the time we get them, so the guilt is guilt. The ladies, darkness comes in many, many, many shades. Many shades. This is a rabbit trail. I knew I'd do it, but I got to tell you this. So I was at Walmart the other day in Alamosa, and we have an Amish community and a Mennonite community south of the town. So I can't tell them apart, but the bun on the back of the head and the tennis shoes and socks and the skirt and a young, beautiful woman, strong, big woman, like you'd think of a big Swede. And she was kind of tagging me through the store. And I had to use the restroom in the back, right by the book section. So I come out of the book section, and there she is. And she's reading a book. And I mean, she is into the book, flipping pages. And I'm trying to find a magazine for the plane to come here. Couldn't find one that would make me happy. Why spend the money? But as I looked, and I thought, you know what she was reading? 50 Shades of Grey. Now, I'm sure you all know about that. It's just a filthy book. It's a filthy story. It's about pushing a woman sexually to see what you can get away with as a man, to push her comfort zone. And I thought, do I say anything? Like, I see you. But no, I thought, no, just let it go, let it go. But there, right there, I was glimpsing a little shade of dark. So Proverbs 27:6, faithful are the wounds of a friend, but deceitful are the kisses of the enemy. I want to give you 5 scenarios of my life, just little snapshots, to let you know what I see. And sometimes that's not good. So my oldest son invited me to a concert. And yes, Karen, Annette, this was pre-Christ. Pre-Christ, I went to a concert in a park, and it was a good rock band and blah, blah. And I watched it for a while, and I told my son, I said, you see that drummer? I guarantee you he's in the system. I guarantee you he's angry and he's got domestic violence issues. Oh, Mom, you're judging and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, I got back to work. I looked it up. Now, mind you, I could have got fired for that, but because it wasn't work related. And sure enough, the fellow was in the system for domestic violence, DUI, and assault. He just reeked of anger. You could tell he's probably in the system. So Matthew 7:15, be aware, they are dressed in sheep's clothing, but are actually ravenous wolves. So a group of friends and I went down to the Taste of Colorado. That's where some of the big hoity-toity restaurants in the Front Range offer. They have booths, and you go through the booths, you pay an exorbitant price for this little taste, and then there's no place to sit down. So we wandered, we finally found a place to sit down and eat our little delicacy that was like $10-$15. And it ended up at the Civic Center Park, where they've got the big cement pad and the fountains that shoot out. I'm sure you all know what I'm talking about. Well, you get that on a hot summer day, it draws every kid from 10 miles around. Kids galore, kids galore. And because there's a lot of alcohol at this Civic Center Park and Taste of Colorado, it's not really a kid event. Most parents come without their kids. So it's neighborhood kids. It's kids that don't really belong to anybody there, having fun in the fountain. Well, we sat down on the cement steps and laughing, complaining about the cost for the taste and et cetera. And my eye drifted to this man that was dressed in blue jeans and a white T-shirt. And I'll see if I can do it. You just have to visualize this. He was standing like this. So his hands were over his crotch, right? And the gyrating, you know, the moving. So put your mind, you know what he's doing. He's enjoying something. And he was watching the kids. And he was watching them quite intently. And it became very obvious to me he was not attached to or associated with any kid or any group of kids. So my criminal justice mind goes, ooh, I better watch this guy. Well, pretty soon my group wanted to leave. And I've learned that I can dominate a conversation with sexual talk. Imagine that. Telling the group what he's doing. That wasn't for them to hear. You learn what to bring home. I learned a long time ago, don't tell your husband half the stuff you deal with, because he worries, and he'll come back to me 2-3 weeks later and go, so how did that case turn out? And I've been worried about it, and it's like, oh, bless his heart. He just, let's leave him out of this. He cared for me, but he cared beyond what he needed to, because that's how he dealt with it. So I learned I can't do this to my friends. So I said, hey, guys, I'll be right back with you. And I drifted quickly to 2 bicycle cops that were a little ways away. I introduced myself in my profession and where I was from, and I said, hey, see that guy? Yeah. He's just not acting normal. There's something with him. He's enjoying the children. He's enjoying them too much. And in his mind, he was there with whatever child he had locked his eyes on and sexually having an encounter with them, whatever that may have been. So the police thanked me, and I drifted back. I don't know what happened, but see, there's a snapshot. So here's another one. 2 Peter 2:13, and it's actually the last half of the verse. Now, I know it's talking about false prophets, but the basic is the same. The last half of the verse says, they are spots and blemishes, carousing in their own deceptions while they feast with you. So another scenario. One time I was at the grocery store, and the checker had a scarf tied around her neck. But it had slipped and crumpled down as her shift went on. And perfectly, you could see at least 3 fingerprints on each side so that somebody got her from the back of the neck and squeezed. Now, I've learned from working with my victims, if you use the word strangling, they'll deny it. They'll go to their death. I was not strangled. I was choked. So, okay, I knew I had to use the right verbiage. And her voice was hoarse. That's another bad sign. All of you nurses know exactly what I'm going to say here. As she was checking my stuff, she was quiet, but I could tell her voice was hoarse. And before we got the last of it for me to go, I looked her in the eye and I said, you know what, dear? People that are choked, the windpipe swells in. It doesn't swell out. It swells in, and it causes that esophagus to lose its air. So logically, the next step is losing air, you're going to suffocate. And some strangulation victims, choking victims, that's how they die. It's not because the esophagus is crushed. It's because that swelling is going inside. The poor thing, she got big tears in her eyes, and she shook her head, and I thought, now's not the time. She's on her shift. Leave her be. And she immediately left, and I said, can I help you here? And she got the next guy's stuff going across the register. But again, that stuff I see. Okay, here's another one. A few years ago, I was back east at one of our Bible family camps that we have. And we'd attended pretty regularly for a number of years, and a congregation came in with a new man I'd never seen before. And I don't know how to... the best sex offender you're not going to pick out. That's what's scary about all this. You will not know who they are. There's no clues. There's no nothing. But this guy fit a particular pattern that I picked up on. And that is, he couldn't take his eyes off the kids. He was young, I don't know, 25, 26. And he thankfully sat near probably the front third. The front third. But any child that walked by, again, they're doing this thing with the hands crossed in his crotch and squirming in the chair. And I'm telling you, his breathing would increase. Like, oh, and he's watching. And that little kid will go over to the bathroom. And he's entranced in that bathroom door. Unless another kid catches his eye. And he's watching that bathroom door. And when that kid comes out, the gyration starts again in the seat. And I'm going, sex offender. I knew it. And sure enough, started doing some investigation, and he was a released from prison felon sex offender that had burned his number and is now out. Now tell me, do you think he learned anything in the pen? No, he didn't learn anything. If anything, he learned how to do better. And so from that, it taught me, and I'm almost afraid to tell you this, I started writing, I've never finished it, how to deal with sex offenders in your congregation. Because they do exist. Sex offenders are there. And I'm going to get back to that in a minute. Let me give you the last scenario. It was actually at a ladies advance here in Montana. It was one of my first ones I'd ever attended after Christ. And the first thing I noticed, I can't tell you how many police reports and cases I've worked on that involve parks, swimming pools, playgrounds, and churches. Because, yeah, you can see why. And the first thing I noticed, after I kind of got to know faces and who belongs to who and which kids belong, there's a lot of kids running amok. There was a lot of kids up and down the hallways, all through the lobby, clear up in the front reservation desk, out in the parking lot, by the pool, and every alarm in my head is going, this is not good. And so I went and drifted, and for the life of me, I cannot remember who I talked to, because I still was learning names. Annette, it might have been you, I don't remember, and said, Annette, I mean, really, we need to have our kids watch better. They were in a public place here. And I remember it was announced, and the moms kind of reined their kids in a little bit. And now, mind you, I'm not into helicopter parenting because I don't think that's good, but I'm also not into free-range parenting anymore. Most of us over 50 here grew up free-range, but it's a different time. It's a different time. So it panicked me, and I said, we've really got to watch our kids. So with that, I've got to tell you, I had to run up to the room about 1:30, and as I walked past the swimming pool, our girls were in the pool, and Montana Icenoggle was on the side watching them, and it's like, yes, there's a small victory, for goodness. Yes, thank you, thank you. So would you thank her for that? Oh, you're right there. Thank you. Thank you for that. I know they were little and younger, but just your patience, your caring, just sitting there, just being a presence. Because I guarantee you, if a man walked in, you'd have noticed, and you'd have kept a real close eye on those girls and where that man was at. So I thank you for that. That's just being caring of our others. So visualize in your head those four girls doing that group hug right now, wandering around the crowd. And they wander, and they stop and look, and they wander. And out they go. I just had to give you that visual. So 1 Peter 5:8, it tells us, be on alert. The adversary is like a lion prowling about to devour you. About 5 years ago, ladies, I was attending a training where these people had got a monster grant. And if you're in the criminal justice system, it's probably similar to the healthcare. There's not a lot of money to use for what's absolutely needed to be done. The grant was chosen because it involved children. And so they chose to figure out how trustworthy are kids. That's a good question. So there was a district attorney's, the local cop shop, the courts, the police and victim advocates on all sides going through there. And they got together, and it took them forever to figure out how to spend the money. But what they chose to do was study kids of how trustworthy. And in that, they got curriculum, they scoured the web, they talked to teachers, they talked to psychiatrists, they talked to counselors. And how can we train our kids to be safe? How can you train your kid to not talk to a stranger? How can you train your kid to not go with somebody they kind of know, unless mom and dad have told them ahead of time, hey, I'm going to have Katie pick you up after school tomorrow or today. And then they got together for phase two and figured out how to set up scenarios with pretend strangers that were part of this deal and people that they knew, semi-knew, kind of knew, maybe knew a lot. And I have to tell you that all of those professionals' kids, every single one of them flunked the test. They flunked it. So if you think you're going to trust a 5-year-old or an 8-year-old or a 10-year-old, you better think twice, because they're normal children. They're normal. Now, Dateline, something similar to Dateline, had a similar study where the news anchorman, it was on not too long ago, had worked with a couple parents. They filmed it. They set an actor up to try to, you know, he was the plumber one day at the house, and then lo and behold, he sees him at the arcade store, and, oh, he's got stuff in the back of his car. He's got it jammed. Would you help? To see if these kids would fall for it. And 90% fell for it right in front of the camera. Humiliated the parents. Some parents were in tears. They swore they could trust their kids. And lo and behold, they can't. So ladies, your kids are kids. Don't give them more responsibility that they can handle. And they may talk tough and rough and right to you, but they're children. They're still going to be lured by puppies and candy and ice cream cones and people in need because they're sweet and they're innocent. So wolves in sheep clothing will always, always be a threat amongst us. The best sex offenders, as I said, fit in so well, you're not going to know who they are. They're masters of deception, specifically with gaining your trust. That's the first thing they need to do, is gain your trust. So how do you tell one from a good, normal person? You can't. I'm honest with you. You just can't. Whether their target is a child, a teen, a young adult, or a mom with kids, that's another prime target, single moms with kids. He might pretend he likes the mom, but he really likes the kids. Keep that in mind. They learn how to groom and get what they want. Now, Karen could testify to this. There's a huge correlation between domestic violence and sex offenders. There's a huge correlation between sex offenders, domestic violence, and animal abuse. Sometimes your best sex offenders, they like same sex or opposite sex, aged partners. So if they're 20, they like 20-year-olds, give or take. If they're 50, they like 50-year-olds. But I can't tell you how many men, mostly men, well, some women, they were teachers, had on caseloads that were sexually attracted to little kids too, but they don't qualify as a pedophile. A pedophile can only have an erection with children. Women, men, their age don't interest them one iota. But there's a lot of men that are sitting in prison and have been running around that can do both. And they look at children as an opportunity. Easy mark, easy hit. Let me mention some names, and I know you're going to know who they are. Sandusky with Penn State. And the Olympics doctor, Nassar. These guys are serial child molesters, and they practice their evil art for decades. Not just one or two, but decades. What did that Nassar have, 100, 200 victims? Well, what about Penn State, that guy, Sandusky? Dozens that I'm aware of, but I haven't studied that case for a while, so don't quote me on a number. The other correlation is they use the same tactics that white-collar crime does. Remember the Ponzi scheme? Some of you are old enough here to remember the Ponzi schemes with investing big dollars and getting all these rich people to trust them, and then you know these manipulators, they go live in luxury for years and disappear. Well, the one guy, Ponzi, got nailed. FBI was involved, and he'll never pay his victims back. Do you know that I had a 96-year-old lady, she was my victim, on a caseload of a Ponzi scheme, and that woman had saved all of her life. She was a school teacher, and she had saved so that when she was no longer able to be in her house, she could be well taken care of. Excuse me. And that guy had come in and took several $100,000 from her, and she wanted her restitution. Now, when I said angry victim, deal with this 96-year-old woman that couldn't talk. Well, she could talk, but she couldn't hear. So everybody in my office, I would warn them ahead of time. I got to talk to Mrs. So-and-so, so I'm going to be yelling, but don't think I'm mad or things are wrong. I had to shout in the phone so this bless her little heart could hear me. And she wanted her money because she's the oldest. But according to the state of Colorado, if offender pays a dollar, you divide it between the victims, the total amount by the victims. So if one's owed 10 cents and the other one's owed 25 and this one's owed 30, it all adds up to a dollar. You get it that way, not according to who's the oldest. But her logic was, but I'm going to die soon. I need this money to be taken care of. How do you deal with that? And this man, you know what that guy did? I was going to call him a name. Zoop. You know what this man did? He declared bankruptcy, but he still owes restitution, but he quit working. Now, and he was about 68, 69, and it's amazing all the health problems he started having. And he couldn't come up on his Social Security with hardly anything for these people. So justice isn't just. We did all we could do in the state of Colorado, but this woman still didn't get her restitution, which to this day bothers me. So there's another darkness, but they use the same tactics, and it's all based on trust. Trust, believe in me, I can do the best, I'm safe. And so some things that alarm me are usually men that have too much to do with the kids, especially the young men, you know, 18 to 30, the out of college age. And that doesn't mean they're all wrong or they're all bad or they're all perping on the kids. But those are the alarms that start going, bing, bing, better pay attention here, better watch. We had a few female sex offenders on our caseload, but it was mostly teachers that couldn't resist the 15-year-old. And I had one, she was 35 and he was 15 and she was now pregnant. So he's a 15-year-old father. They're not supposed to see their victims, but yet he wants to see his daughter. There's an innocent child created by all of this that has nothing to do with the mess of the parents. Now, how do you deal with this? How do you balance and find justice in that? It's very difficult. And then add social services. Ooh, bad. It was difficult, to say the least. Now, what about the new technology that brings us, every decade, less than that, we get new technology that's got some new way to get involved in something dark. I'm sure you've all heard of sexting. It's sending text messages with porn pictures of yourself. And these high school kids, junior high kids, get into it so hot and heavy. Some states were really prosecuting that because it's wrong. You cannot do that, let alone if you pass the picture. So our children need to be educated that this is not proper. We don't do this. Moms, I cannot encourage you enough to be in your kids' Facebook, your Twitter, and their emails and their text messages. Know who they're communicating with and why. You can't know enough. And if your kid, if you young ladies find that an invasion of privacy, well, then wait till you grow up and things will change. It's your mother's priority to be able to do that. They've got to be able to see what you're doing because they care for you, they love you, and they're sneaky, dirty, awful people that are going to work on deceiving you. Speaking of which, what about the chat rooms that are associated with video games? Any chat room that a kid could get on, but most of them are with the video games, where they talk about how they scored and how they got this person and blah, 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 and they're all proud and bragging. I worked with a district one time to nail our county because we knew there was some sex offending coming out on these particular websites. And these detectives, they basically sit in the office all day with the disposable phones, the game, whatever they're playing, and many computer access windows, and got involved in chat rooms. But Detective Smith was in there as a 10-year-old, as Susie as a 5-year-old, you know, just learning how to play, taking on the persona and the verbiage of a kid. Every time, like clockwork, we could nail him right and left. Because the sex offender lures that kid out, how's home, you know, how'd you do on the game, do you like Esmeralda's dress, do you look good in dresses, what do you like to wear when you dress up, you know, see, just start wearing them down, just a little bit, gaining trust, but wearing them down, right under the parents' noses. Now, but these were all fake scenarios these cops were doing. So then they get a time and a date set up, offenders worked really hard to isolate little 14-year-old Johnny. Because then he finds out basically where they live, where's the nearest arcade or the subway shop or whatever. Whatever's close, they figure it out. And lure them away. And it's walking distance, there's no problem going on here. And right under the parents' nose, and they have no idea this is going on. So chat rooms are dangerous places for children or teens to be. I don't care how innocent it is on the surface, they're very, very dangerous. Because sooner or later, an offender is going to weasel their way through and zero in on somebody that's vulnerable. And I don't know too many of you that do not know a vulnerable kid. I don't know too many kids in this room or us as adults that we're not vulnerable at one time or so mad at our parents or, you know, whatever, that we're vulnerable, very vulnerable, and more taken down by darkness. So that's our job, to do the best we can to be there for them. Now, since I've retired 2 years ago, technology has changed. And I have to tell you that I checked the websites. I checked and thought, oh, I got to bring them a list. I could have printed you 50 pages of single space front and back of stuff that's available for there for you to be safer and make safer choices and to educate your children. I'm going to give you five of them, I think. Yeah, five. That are just my favorites. I actually still have them after retired summer books, and because sooner or later it crosses my path and I need this stuff. One is The Swimsuit Lesson. It's just a book. It's called The Swimsuit Lesson. It was written by a cop that I was introduced to. He works on the Front Range in one of those police departments, and I knew him through a series of people. But he had children, and as a cop, he's investigated one too many of these crimes. And his name is John Holsten, Holsten. Now, you might be able to check it out at your library, I don't know, but it's The Swimsuit Lesson. The second one is called Please Knock. Please Knock. And it's written by Aaron Dolgan, Dolgan. And I got to listen to her once at a conference, I don't know, a number of years ago, and she was a dynamic speaker and had a passion for keeping children as safe as possible. Here's one that takes a different twist. It's called Courage to Heal. Ladies, I cannot recommend this book enough. It's a book and a workbook. It's called Courage to Heal. And it's by two women, an Ellen Bass and a Laura Davis. For victims of sex assault, it is phenomenal. For victims of domestic violence, it's also good. And then Violent No More. That's Violent No More, helping men in domestic abuse, and then there's also a workbook that goes with it. It's rather on the therapeutic model, but it's really good. And then the one website that covers so many things, I was just shocked at how good it was. It's simple. It's domesticshelters.org. They had book after book after review, commentary, etc. For victims of incest, this isn't on my list, but it should be, is the Wings Foundation. Bird Wings? The Wings Foundation. I don't quite know what their website is, but they have chapters everywhere. Everywhere. Ladies, I'm sorry to say, but I'm pretty sure I'm 100% right. Every town, every big town in Montana has got a domestic violence shelter, has got a network to shuttle women out of the violent zone and into some sort of safety. Please be aware of that. Somebody in your congregation needs to know about the shelter and how to get people there if needed. Keep that in mind. So, domestic violence. We've touched a little bit about that. I'll tell you what, nobody, I don't care how big of a pill she usually could be, she doesn't deserve to get walloped. Doesn't deserve bruises or split lips or black eyes or foul language shouted at her. Women don't deserve this. Men don't deserve this. Children don't deserve this. And I'm sorry to say, for too many decades in America, the victim was encouraged, oh, just stay with him. Just love him. You know, make sure you have dinner at 6 o'clock so he doesn't pitch a fit. You know that kind of garbage. I'm telling you, I hear that and I go ballistic, because that is not the answer. That is not the answer. That person needs Christ, and ultimately counseling without Christ is good, but not as complete as it could be. I am all for involving the police, and I'm all for involving the congregation. Now, we cannot be vigilantes and practice vigilantism. In the state of Colorado, we have a classification that puts sex offenders into way up there, to where the neighborhood that they move into has the right to know that he's living at 112 Maple Avenue. And so you have a big cop meeting. There's cops everywhere. The district attorney is there. And they invite the community with flyers and knocking on the door. Please come if you'd like to know about this. And I went to several of them. And understandably, I mean, first of all, they were livid, the guys living there. And second of all, it's like I'm packing and I'm carrying a bat and all these things. And it's like, how well I understand that. I could tell you guys of a training once, here goes a rabbit trail, a training once that I went to that was a father that had sexually abused his daughter, and now the daughter was a young adult, married with kids, but had physical sex with her. And my thought was, I need to kill him. I just need to go up there and take that. It was all I could do to sit in my chair and not come unglued. So I could experience what the neighborhood felt like of having this guy live there amongst them. But you know what happens when we behave that way? We force them underground, and they get even sneakier. Wouldn't you rather know about them? Wouldn't you rather know they're in your presence than have them come in sideways and put the hood over your head and go, hi? No, you don't want that. So when somebody comes in our congregation, whether it's a sex offender or a domestic violence abuser, what we need to do is be united as one. Oh, there goes those four girls again. Do you see them? They're doing their little dance, working as one unit. Around they go, out the door. Keep that in mind. Now, our offenders need to be repentant and accountable. And the best way I have found, when you know about them, there's still that side we don't know about. When you know about them, is the congregation needs to work as a whole. Because you know what? Who are we to deny somebody the opportunity to come to Christ? But who are we to allow somebody the opportunity to perp on us, to select us and take us down one way or another? So it's a fine line. I highly encourage every one of your congregations to just have a congregational meeting that usually doesn't involve the kids, where the men know, what do you do if? How are you going to handle it? If you know there's sex offenders among you and they're accountable, they're remorseful, they want change, it's going to show in their life. Because number one, they're going to be cooperative with you. We have found some of our best cases that we prosecuted and successfully terminated did involve a church when one or two men of that congregation were part of the supervision team. But they're also under a disclosure of, I'm not going to tell everybody that his fantasy is blah, 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 or that he takes these drugs, or that he flunked the plethysmograph. Do y'all know what a plethysmograph is? I know one does, at least back there. And I knew the doctor that invented this. It's a device that goes around a men's penis, and they get showed pictures, like that was in the old catalogs, the old Ward's and Sears catalogs. Some of us still remember what those were. So it was just underwear, maybe swimsuit pictures. You'll see them in your big newspaper when they're advertising at Macy's or Dillard's. Just so they're not porn, but they're certainly not well-clothed. What causes an arousal in the man? And what this did was train us, the professionals, to know what to look for, to know how to fine-tune our questions when we'd come in on the polygraphs. You know, where's their level of arousal is what it come down to. So if they flunk that, or they flunk their polygraph, which polygraphs are not allowed in the court of law in the state of Colorado, but we can still get them talking. Johnny, I see you didn't do too well on your plethysmograph or your poly. And if they talk, we got them. So, you know, by then you've built bridges, you get them to talk, you get them to trust you, you play their game on them, and they start talking, yeah, they got me on, blah, blah, when they ask, and it's like, ding, we just won. Got them in court, and we can prosecute it that way. So, the men in the congregation need to know how to deal with this, and we women need to know how to deal with it, not be hysterical. I don't know about you women, I pride myself of not being too emotional, but just get me wound up, and it comes out. I can get real emotional. I don't cry as much as most women do, but boy, can I get hot and angry. And neither way is productive. I once met a female general in one of my conferences I went to that has worked at the war tables during the Afghanistan mess. So that would have been, what, 90s, early 90s. This woman was well put together, extremely feminine, and she sat on the war tables before with five-star generals plotting strategy. But you know why? Because she could handle that because she kept her emotions calm, collected, and didn't base decisions on emotions. So if this ever happens in your congregation or you're aware of a sex offender that's visiting, you need to be calm. And how would Christ handle this? And I know that's an old cliche, but I'm serious. You need to think about that. How would Jesus handle this? What does that person need? And how can I represent that? And how can we work as a whole? Oh, there goes those four girls again. Back around they go. They come up here. They go out the door. Teamwork. So accountability and repentance and their willingness to let you work with them. In the same respect, what about domestic violence? Do you know that it's only been less than 35 years that it was allowed mid to early 80s and beyond? You could beat the pee waddens out of your wife. You could bust ribs. You could puncture a lung. You could crush in eye sockets. She's your wife. So just be nicer next time, Johnny. Don't get so mad at her. You know, give her some patience. Tell me, did that work? No. No, it did not. So it's finally now against the law due to a case that worked its way from the Texas courts, the Texas Supreme Court, to our United States Supreme Court, and it's now illegal to do that. You couldn't do that to the neighbor, but you could sure do it to your spouse. We also come from the mentality that what goes on in a man's house is his business. It's his castle. We don't invade there. Well, I'm sorry, that's baloney. That does not work. People do not need to be abused. So, shades of dark. I've quickly went over very basic things, very dark things. But most of what I've covered, I highly suspect that most of you know. Most of you are computer savvy. If you want to find something, you know how to find it on your computer. please get your database in your head with some basic knowledge in this, because I guarantee sooner or later this is going to cross one of your paths. It's either going to be somebody in the body, in the congregation, it's going to be a family member, it's going to be somebody that lives next door. You need to know how to deal with this on a professional level, who to contact, who to get involved, and how to help that person. Keep that in mind. So checking with the local domestic violence shelters and the websites, you're going to find software that can go on phones. You can find, they'll watch a computer program. But mind you, every good software the good guys invent, the bad guys quickly figure out how to get around it. So nothing's foolproof. Nothing is foolproof. Now, I ask again, how can I give you tools to shine Christ's light in dark places? I learned after 21 years, I cannot promise you safety. And believe me, that was the hardest thing as a professional to be able to admit. I cannot promise you safety. But I can offer you education. I can offer you alternatives. I can offer you choices. Because given a victim of sex assault or a victim of domestic violence choice, it's a rare thing. Some of them have never experienced that. And that's the step in beginning to empower that person. It's usually a woman or kid or family. We need to empower them to grow and to be strong and to make choices and to validate what they're choosing. I once had a woman that was blinded in one eye because he hit her so hard. She had one eye that never seen well at birth. It was there, but it was in a weird place, and she couldn't focus, couldn't see. And the other eye, he knew that's her good eye, so all she had to do is make him mad, and whack! Crushed in her eye socket, and that eye was swollen for days. Weeks, actually. And she refused to testify against him in court. And it's like, but believe me, that's one of our biggest nightmares is when they recant like that. And it's like, we need your testimony to nail his behind. And she hung up on me. She's screaming at me. I don't want to do this. And so, man, this is bugging me. And this is pre-Christ, but I did have empathy back then. I called her up, and her name was Denise. And I said, Denise, I know you're mad at me. I know you are. His name was Dennis, too. I said, do you want Dennis to have any more power? Do you want him to have any more power over you than what he's already exhibited, what he's already did? She starts bawling, and she goes, no. Okay, so I got her. I said, dear, without your testimony, we're not going to get him in court very far. He's going to get a minimal conviction at best. This man needs to do TO, Department of Correction time. I know, I know. I said, dear, you got to be strong. You got to stand with me. We'll be there with you in court. We'll, etc. She finally relented, and he ended up doing 3 or 4 years in the Department of Corrections. Now, mind you, I still check every once in a while for his name publicly to see if he's out there, because those things don't leave your head. Even after retiring 2 years, I still get cop calls of cases that I worked on and saying, would you be willing to testify on blah, blah, and tell me what happened, da-da. And I said, you bet. I'll do it. So let me read you a verse, because I'm switching gears here on you, and this is where your toes are going to hurt. I'm just warning you. So 2 Corinthians 4, 10 through 12. We are always carrying about in the body the dying of the Lord Jesus, and the life of Jesus also may be manifested in our body. For we who live are always delivered to death for Jesus' sake, that the life of Jesus also may be manifested in our mortal flesh. So then death is working in us, but life in you. Now, I had to read that a whole bunch of times. I had to look at several different versions saying, what is God telling me here? Let me read you another verse. This one you all know really well. Ephesians 6, 11 through 12. Put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against rulers of darkness of this age, against the spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. So, one of the dark areas in the assemblies I see, and guys, part of my job, I had to work with district attorney's offices, defense attorneys, which I do not like them. Just don't tell anybody I said that, but they're just nasty people. Because they're trying to tell me their offender is innocent and we need to give them a light sentence. And it's like, not really. Judges, parole officers, because we sometimes shared clients with probation and parole. Individual cop shops. The county I was from, we had 21 or two different cop shops in it. And you better learn to play well together because you are working together to fight crime. You must be united. And when I came there, it was a war. It's not my job. I'm not doing that. That's not my responsibility. No, he's across the county line. It belongs to county dogs, not us. You get tired of hearing that. And I decided way back in the 90s, pre-Christ, that enough was enough and we all needed to get along and we need to be united and work together for a common purpose. And I am available for any information through the social services because we shared clients and they get their child support if they work with us. Imagine that. And I built networks. And in that, I created a coalition that's a troubleshooter. All these coalitions sent people in. Let's talk about how's it going. How is the, from the time we see the priest jogging naked at 4:30 in the morning, that was a real case. Yeah, with that cop shop, how are we going to get that prosecuted in court and him successfully supervised? Got to work together. So we had troubleshooting times. And so I kind of have an ability to see holes and go, this isn't working. Guys, but you got to do it diplomatically so you don't insult them. Like, there was a time at the DA's office, it was such a mess. I could have strangled every employee there. And you can't go in there saying that or they get really annoyed with you. So I had to be politically correct and get them talking and get them, but got the problem solved. In the same respect, District Attorney's Office and I, together, we decided there's a problem with restitution and all these other issues. Let's go to the state boys and say, you guys are going to get your behind sued if you don't get this cinched up here. Because here's the statute and none of us are following it. Within 6 months, a statute that had been on the books over 10 years, they started the process to get the thing going. Because we cooperated, we grew together, and we knew there was an issue. So ladies, there's issues. I see issues. Here's what I see. We really, really wear the helmet of salvation. We polish that Hummer. Man, is it beautiful. And we wear our helmet and we strut up and down because, man, I got this helmet on salvation. You see this? I'm a Christian. Look at that. Yeah. I'm up and down the aisles at church and assembly. That's my background. I got my helmet on. Isn't it nice? Yeah. And I forget to put on the breastplate of righteousness. The breastplate of righteousness is a must in order for those four girls to march through and be together. It's a must. You have to wear it. Now, if you think you're going to end up in heaven with bright and shiny armor, y'all better think twice. If your armor's bright and shiny, I think the King of Kings is going to go, I'm sorry, I don't know you. Our armor has to be battle-scarred. It has to be worn. It has to be all in together in one piece, and we all need to work together. The first time I heard this was from Katie Miller at the time, now Wilson, about how the Romans fought back-to-back. They were defensible. They got everybody's back. They're all together. They're all protecting one another as one unified force. But you know what? When we have little petty issues, and she didn't speak to me, Lori gave me a dirty look the other day. How dare you? I'm not going to talk to you now again. Oh, you snarked my kid. You didn't give me a compliment that I thought I deserved. You know what? I don't like the way she's looking at my husband. I hate her. You know what she is? She's a blah, 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 blah. Or what about, did you hear? And yeah, and then she wants us to pray for this. You see where that's going? Tell me, where's Jesus Christ in that? Where's the Holy Spirit? Those girls aren't marching together as one in that moment. We're separate and independent. And when we do nasties like that and we don't forgive, we got hole in our armor. Holes in armors are very, very dangerous things. So when issues like, let me read you this, hurt feelings, anger, avoidance, even a little revenge, a lot of not forgiving, we have a collective problem. It's called a hole in the armor. And these perpetrators, these bad people that like to take advantage of us, they can just see that little pinpoint, and they can just come zooming in and work right through there because we have weakness in our body. So what we need to do is be unified in one. We recently had a man in our congregation that showed up. We're in the middle of nowhere, and who is he? Smelled. He was dirty, grungy, and he just looked mean. And where he had to sit, thankfully, because our room was tiny in the wintertime, why pay for the whole auditorium to get heated? We sit in the kitchen. He worked his way from the door all the way up front because that was the one seat left available. And I thought to myself, my husband was there, I thought, whew, I'm glad he's sitting where we can see him. But afterwards, I talked to my husband, criminal justice mode, and I said, dear, if that man would have sat in the back, if that ever happens again, would you get up and sit with him? Just sit beside him. I want you to watch him. Just be there. Ladies, we need to train our men so that if there's a stranger, that doesn't mean they're a rapist, murderous, robber, blah, blah. But if we don't know them until we know them, keep an eye on them. If we know of sex offenders in our congregation, they need to sit in the front so there's less distraction. If you notice, I try to sit in the front. Either that, I look at all your earrings, the back of your heads, who's got the cute haircuts. I'm bad with that, but I'm not perping on kids. We need to educate our bodies on what to do, and I mean the body of Christ, if somebody's amongst us with that. Now, ladies, when we've got chinks in our armor, tell me, is a woman amongst us going to come to me and say, my husband is abusive? Or, look, I've got a smart offender. They don't get you black and blue where you can see. They get you where you can't see. You know, the upper arms that are covered by shirts, the body, the back. So sometimes the bruising isn't visible. But if we're not getting along and treating each other with ultimate dignity and respect and love and forgiveness, that is a checkpoint of that person that needs us is going to be hesitant to follow through and let us help. If there's a child involved in incest, and we are too busy snarking on one another and not being one strong, unified force, tell me, is that child going to feel comfortable coming to one of us and saying, my dad's doing this, is this normal? Because they don't know it's not normal. So, let's see. Ephesians 4, 22 through 23. In reference to your former manner of life, you lay aside the old self, which is being corrupted in accordance with the lust of deceit, and that you are renewed in the spirit of your mind. You know, sin is sin in God's book, right? Right? Am I right? Sin is sin. So, taking a wallet off the front seat of a car because the window was down is just as bad as a rape, right? Yes. Shake your head, yes. Yes. Being disrespectful to our mothers, our dads, our husbands, not forgiving one another, or maybe thinking about, oh, I need to put that person in their place. Believe me, pre-Christ, ooh, I was good at that. And believe me, I'm not proud of that no more. Because I've got to remember, put Christ first. How would he handle this situation? You know, first, when we've taken off the breastplate of righteousness, we are, get this, and this, I shocked my traditional Church of Christ ladies a couple weeks ago with this comment. I said, you know what, it's been one of those days I've left a butt print on the throne. And what? And I said, you've all sat in big comfy chairs, right? I didn't know if I was going to make them mad. I thought, oh man, I've overstepped my bounds here. You sit in a big comfy chair and then you get up and there's your bottom prints. You know, God will say, okay, fine, chair, you want to sit here? I'll get up. Go ahead. You can sit there as long as you want. When we take off our breastplate of righteousness, we're leaving a butt print on his throne. And that is not our job. And we mess stuff up. So Philippians 2:2, be of one mind. Same love, bearing, be of one mind, same love, being one in the Spirit. I am on the last page, I promise. Being one in the Spirit. So darkness prevails if we let it. Darkness will get through the armor if you don't have it on right. It'll get through you if you don't have it on. You know, the best place in the beginning when they thought up armor, some whiz-bang back a long time ago, thought up that armor that they'd walk around in, the best place to nail somebody was where the pieces fit together, whether it was at the neck or here at the shoulder. You get a good archer, they could come in right there with a big arrow and you're gone. So then they learned to put little shields on there. Our armor is best protected when we're back-to-back with one another. When we're not back-to-back and loving and supporting and nurturing and caring and forgiving one another, why do you think God put us in this annoying situation? Because you need to learn how to get along and love that person and that person and that person. And all of our little bodies are like little families. We all have our own weirdo dysfunction, silly stuff, embarrassing. We're all different. I know all you have the congregation, you all got some different personality going on, just like a family. Oh, gee, we have to love each other. I am convinced, and this is a good study, if you trace Scripture, you can show that we need to finish as one across the line. I can't drag you, but I can nurture you. I can try to support you. I can do everything possible to get you across that finish line in the end. Ladies, I take it as my responsibility, your spiritual viability. It is my responsibility to make sure that you're growing. And believe me, when I come back year after year, I check in on people. And you know that some of you avoid me for that. Because you know you're not growing. You're avoiding me. And I pick up on this. So ladies, we are responsible for one another. So here it comes down to Bible studies. I'm not talking good deeds. Good deeds are good things. Good deeds are not vacuuming the building and folding the bulletins. Good deeds are seriously caring about that person's soul. Now, I know seeking and saving is our goal, and it's our purpose, and we are to reproduce. But if we're such a dysfunctional plant that we can't produce a fruit, we got issues. We need some fertilizer. We need, you know, watering. We need some pruning. If we're not caring about one another, we will not be caring for the lost. You can gauge the spiritual health of an individual, and you can engage the spiritual health and really judge it all adequately of a congregational body by how many Bible studies are going on in that building. Not in the building, but with the members. And I don't mean Sunday morning and Sunday night and Wednesday. That's all. You better be doing that anyway if you want to grow. I mean one-on-one with each other. Not just the lost people. Because you know what? I need to buff up. I need help. I need strength. And I need people like Katie. She took me under her wing for how many years, Katie? 5 years? God bless you and thank you for your sermon on the Old Testament. Yes, I'm getting it. It's getting, yes. I was happy. We need to nourish each other's souls so that that person can be buffed up strong and wear their armor and go out and seek to save the lost and know what to do with them when they snag them. Know how to nourish that soul. But we're so busy avoiding one another and having boundaries and issues and etc. We don't study with one another very seldom. It's rare. So you should be, in my opinion, and you know I'm opinionated, is you got to read the Bible, but I'm not talking reading. I'm talking studying it. Do you keep notes? Do you do cross-references? Do you have a study with yourself and the Word and God? Do you do that? Ask questions. Find answers. Cross-references. What else fills into this? The other thing is, are you having studies with each other? Guys, I've got a list this long of studies I've went through. And yes, most of them aren't on target. So how do you deal with that? You look up at the Word and you write in the margin of the book, miss truth here, or this is only a half-truth, blah, blah, blah. And I had to learn that the hard way, because when I came into the kingdom in 06, shortly thereafter, one of my coworkers wanted a study, and she wanted to study Max Licato. I don't know if you know anything about him. He's a former Church of Christ. He used to believe that immersion was necessary, now doesn't believe it whatsoever. And he's a very florid writer. I mean, he can describe something that just, you're right there. He's an excellent writer of putting thoughts and feelings on paper. But he misses truth a lot. A lot. And I tried really hard to get Randy Joe to try something else. Nope, she only wants to study this dang Max Licato. So tell me, am I going to give that up? Am I going to say, oh, sorry, I don't like him? No, I am not doing that. So I got into the study with her and we studied Max. And I never knocked him. I never tore him down. I never corrected anything in there. But what I did was say, you know, he's talking about whatever it was. Let's check Scripture. I just want to, because that's just kind of sounding different. So let's, and I'd have her write truth in her book. You know, here's the verse, here's the whatever. So we could get over those partial ouches. One of the denominations that doesn't go to my, well, obviously, congregation, has invited me to their Bible study, their group Bible study in town. Now, mind you, in the wintertime, we're 500 people in the whole town, and there's five churches there. And some of the ladies of my congregation were mortified. You're going to go into that devil territory? Whoa, 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 whoa. And it's like, are you serious? That's my job. We've got to go into that devil territory. How else are we going to show them truth? And who are you to tell this person that their soul's not worthy of truth because they go to this congregation? It doesn't work that way in Scripture. We're to be all part of that. So, one more example. You guys have seen those competitions with those big strong men. It's usually the Celts or the Irish or the Scottish, where they have that big log, and they chuck it. They run and they throw that sucker, that's a really big, heavy thing. And whoever can throw it the farthest wins, right? It's got some name. In fact, Prue told me what it was, and for life me, I cannot remember what it's called.
It's a tabor.
That sounds close.
T-A-B-O-R.
All right. Did you get that? So, think of it this way. When somebody's being nasty to you, or has hurt you, has insulted you, has stepped on your toes, has... Whatever you're in a tiz about it. You're just not Christ-like at the moment. I want you to think of them volleying in that big log at you. And you are a good target. Right? Now let's step one step further. I want you to think of that as a cross with a pointed end. And didn't Jesus say, pick up your cross and carry it? Where to pick up other people's crosses and carry them? This is a lesson I'm learning in my life. When they lob them in, you know what? It hurts. It hurts, and it first of all, about knocks you over. And I can think up the best things to put them in their place and send another one right back at them just quicker than you can imagine. And then I go, oh, what would Jesus do? And I realize Sherry needs to catch those crosses coming at her. And you know what? With Christ in you, you can carry as many crosses as you can put on your shoulders, and Christ will say, good job. Well done, faithful servant. So carrying a cross is not about your pain in the behind stuff and your annoyances and somebody upset you or whatever. Your cross is carrying it for that person so that they see Jesus Christ. When they see Jesus, when they've hurt you, insulted you, and some people purposely, just because they're nasty, are having a bad day and it gives them an excuse to lob crosses at people. And that's not appropriate. And hopefully in time they're going to grow and get over that. But we need to go, caught it. Thank you, God. Here comes another one. Caught it. So when somebody's being hateful and nasty, hurtful, wicked, whatever, show them Jesus, gracious, kind, radiant, joyful, peaceful. Be peacemakers. Because ladies, if we're not united as one, we're open territory for the perpetrators. And I don't like more perpetrators in my midst. I don't want more harm. So how do we expose darkness? Here's my concluding sentence. We expose darkness, setting self and the old nature aside and uniting as one in the mind of Christ. What is our purpose here? And that is to glorify and honor Christ.